This is a presentation of LifePoint Church. Our mission is to make gospel-centered disciples of Jesus Christ. For more information, please visit sharethelife.org.
Now, we just saw a commercial from 1960. Someone got paid a lot of money to produce that incredible commercial about a particular game. Has anybody heard or played the game called Life, a board game? Anybody played this? Yeah. Did anybody play that version of the game from 1960? Yeah. Okay, there's a few of us that saw that commercial. This game has been around a long time, and I'm amazed as I've been talking to people this week. I have yet to meet someone that hasn't played this game. Everybody has. Everybody knows the game of Life. It's been around a long time. I actually went 18 years of my life never having played this. I had a neglected childhood, and I missed out on the game of life. But fortunately, I met a beautiful woman at the age of 18. I would later marry her. And she introduced me on one of our first dates to the board game called Life. I'd never played it before. And so I was enthralled by this beautiful redhead, and I'm not playing the game very well because she's so pretty and it's distracting me. And this sweet girl is just smoking me at the game, relentless. I mean, she destroyed me in the game of life, beat me by a lot of points in that game. We've all played the game of life. We're familiar with it. I've got a picture here of the version that I played with. I think this version was released in 2000, and it's been around a long time. Here's the version from the year 1960. This is what it looked like back in 1960. The amazing thing about this game is it was actually originally released in the 60s, but not in the 1960s. It's actually from 1860. Here is the original checkered game of life. And do you know who made it? A guy named Milton Bradley in 1860. His company's still around today making games. Originally, as you can see from this picture, the game was an adaptation of checkers. So you had a checkered board, and the checkered board had a lot of different spaces on it that you would work your way through the board as you played the game. Originally, the game was actually designed to help teach children good morals, amazingly. So take a look at the game. Here's the starting point. You start at infancy, and you work your way through the game, actually spinning a top, because at that time, rolling dice was associated with gambling. So they wouldn't even use dice. They'd spin a top, and you'd determine how many moves you could move forward. And look, you try to make your way through life. So if you went to school, that was good. But if you were disgraced, you put on the dunce hat, and you lost points, right? You didn't want to end up in poverty. You wanted to have good influence. You didn't want to go to jail, and so on. Here's the amazing thing. The end of the game, the goal, the great finish line, is up here in the right-hand corner. If you won the game, you made it to the ripe old age of 50. You're a winner. Happy old age. Anybody cross that mark here? Congratulations. That's awesome. You have won the game. Isn't that amazing? I was curious why they said 50, so I looked it up, and the average life expectancy in 1860 was actually just over 40 years. 40 years. The game of life has been around a long time, and we've all played it. And I've been thinking this week about why this game has been so successful. I mean, everybody in this room has heard of it. Most of us have played it, and it's been around for over a century. Why is this game so successful? I think the reason the game of life took off for Milton Bradley was because he created a game that reminds us of how real life is. It's a lot like real life, isn't it? I mean, we kind of make our way through life like this checkered board. It's a series of decisions. We're born, and then we grow up, and we begin to make decisions, and we try and step carefully through the checkered board of life. And we take one step in this direction, and we hope that we picked the right school, right? And we take one other step in this direction, and you hope that you chose the right career path. Maybe you made a good choice. Then we take a step in this direction. We hope we picked the right spouse. We hope that we created the right family. We hope that we retired at the right age. We hope that we have enough money when we retire. It's a series of decisions. And we want to play the game well, don't we? So it's kind of fun to pull out a board game and pretend our way through life. But the reality of life is this, that in the game of life, everyone is going to arrive somewhere on the checkered board. But the reality is few of us land there on purpose. I think if we've lived any amount of time in our life, we all know this to some sense, that everyone in life is going to end up somewhere on the board, but few of us arrive on purpose. I'm talking about intentionality. I'm talking about seeing the last piece on the checkered board, creating a trajectory for your life, and walking in that direction towards that prize. Few of us get there, but we all want to walk through life in wisdom. We want to make great choices throughout life. Here's my goal for us today. I want us to learn together how we can play the game of life well. Today, our goal is for all of us to take a look at how we live life, how we're walking through it right now, and I want us to look carefully. I want us to watch the way we walk through life. I think today's text addresses this big question. How can we walk wisely? How can we walk through life in wisdom? And I've broken it down into three questions that we'll explore today. So here's all we're covering today. The first question is this: what is walking wisely? What does that look like? I want to talk about what the characteristics are of a life that's walking in wisdom. Second, what's the fuel for this life of walking in wisdom? We all need motivation. We all need the drive to continue to walk this way. How can we fuel ourselves? And the final question is this: what's the goal? What's the prize of walking in wisdom? I think Paul has some answers for us in Ephesians. So if you turn there with me, I'd love for your eyes to be on the Bible today. So if you don't have one, you can grab one in the pew back in front of you. If you don't have a Bible, those are free for you. That's a gift. So we'd love for you to take that home. Turn with me to Ephesians chapter 5, and we're starting in verse 15. It says this: look carefully, then, how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise, making the best use of the time, because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. A few years ago, I became obsessed with time management. I was in a busy season of life. I was actually working at the church, and I was attending seminary full time. Unfortunately, that seminary was about 70 miles south of us, so I had to drive every day. I had class all the way to Littleton, straight through Denver on I-25 traffic. Now, on a good day, without any traffic, that was about an hour and 15 minutes. On bad days, that could be anywhere between 2 and 3 hours, one way. So spending a lot of time in the car, and I became obsessed with how can I use that time efficiently. So I did some research, and I ended up figuring out a way that I could hack into this device in my pocket. And if anybody has an iPhone, you know that there's this creepy woman inside of it. Her name's Siri, and she helps you with things every once in a while. I figured out a way to hack into Siri and have her actually read to me out loud. And in fact, any of my seminary books that I loaded onto the Kindle app, I was able to get Siri to read back to me. I thought this was pretty nifty. So as I was driving down to Denver, I was listening to Siri read my seminary books. But I started noticing something after a while, that I needed to take notes in order to remember what Siri was reading to me. So I found a different app that I could actually dictate my notes into my phone, into Evernote, using the microphone. So now I'm driving, I'm listening to a book that Siri's reading to me, and then I'm actually using my phone to dictate notes into Evernote. And I thought, man, this is great. I kept reading these books about using your time well and multitasking. I thought, man, you know, how could I save even more time? And I thought, I know, I'll eat lunch on the way to seminary. And so I remember the lowest point of my life in time management came when I had an afternoon class. I had one of those salads from King Soopers that's kind of prepackaged, but you sort of have to make it in order to actually eat it. So here I am driving. I'm using my knee on the steering wheel. I am unwrapping all the different packages to create my salad while Siri is reading a book, and I'm dictating notes all on my drive to seminary. It was great. Paul says, make the best use of the time. And I did. I'm pretty certain that some of what I was doing was probably illegal. And it was very foolish, and I'm not proud of that in any way. I'm not advising that you do that. And it wasn't good. I don't think this is what Paul had in mind. See, those are popular right now, the time management books. And I think our culture is obsessed with productivity, right? If we could just squeeze more productivity into the hours of my day, then I'll be successful. We're obsessed with efficiency. I don't think Paul's pointing us to this type of time management. He says, make the best use of the time. The word that he's using here, it's a verb. It's actually the same verb that they use for redeem. He's actually saying, take back time and use it for a purpose. But he carefully knows that he needs to qualify the statement, because obsessing with efficiency and time management is pointless unless it's directed with a purpose. That's why he has a therefore. Why is the therefore there? What's it for? He says, therefore, do not be foolish. Don't be unwise. But understand what the will of the Lord is. Paul qualifies the use of our time with one guiding axiom. He says, whatever you do, use that time, redeem it as best you can, but in accordance with God's will. I ran our college ministry for about a year, and college students are really concerned with that question. What's God's will for my life? Many of them are at a juncture where they're looking for a potential career, a major that they should decide. They're looking for a spouse. And a lot of people ask that question at that age and time. What's God's will for my life? Is this what Paul's saying? The language here is actually pointing to something different. Theologians talk about two different types of God's will. There's God's hidden will. That's often the one that college students are looking for. They're searching for something that God hasn't revealed to them yet, but God has a path. He knows the way of your life, but he hasn't unfolded it completely to you. That's God's hidden will, but theologians also talk about one that's God's revealed will. You see, God has a will and a purpose and a design for this world, and he's made it clear, and here's the best place you can find it. It's right here. And I've always been amazed at that stage of life for college students, because we get so obsessed with God's hidden will, we actually look past the thing that's in writing. It couldn't be more clear. God said, I have a will for how you should walk through life. It's right here. It couldn't be more clear. You can hold it in your hands. You can read it and remember it. You can memorize it. I have shown you the way. This is my will for your life. And Paul's saying, look towards Scripture, look toward God's revealed will to help qualify the way you use your time. If we were to summarize what Paul's trying to say about what it looks like to walk in wisdom, it's this. He says, redeem time according to God's design and purpose. I use the words design and purpose very intentionally, and here's why. Milton Bradley in 1860 created a game that I'm pretty confident he never lost. Right? When Milton Bradley sits down to play the game of life, he typically wins. And the reason he wins the game he created is because he has designed the game. He wrote it. He knows exactly how it should be played. And here is the reality, folks, of our lives. Our lives have a designer. We have one, God, who created all things. And he knows how this life was meant to be lived. So we don't have to search for some other axiom of life to guide the way we should live. God says, look to me, the designer of life, and I'll show you how you can use your time best. Come to me. Do this according to my will. This is what it looks like to walk in wisdom, redeeming time according to God's design. What would it look like, though, if we walked this way consistently? I mean, I know for you and I have good weeks and bad weeks, and I'm sure you have good weeks and bad weeks. And on those good weeks, maybe you're using your time efficiently, and maybe you're actually praying and trying to seek God's will for your life and trying to walk in alignment with Him. But the reality is we often lose that fuel. We lose that capacity continually to walk in wisdom. Paul has an answer for us. He wants to make sure that we continue to be fueled for walking in wisdom. He says this in verse 18. He says, and do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit. I've never played the game of life against someone who was drunk, but my guess is that I could beat somebody if they were really drunk playing the game of life. That's just a guess. And here's why. I know that when you get drunk, drinking too much alcohol actually is meant to impair your judgment. People don't often make great decisions when they're drunk. And if wisdom is actually defined as sound judgment applied to life, then getting drunk would be actually the opposite of that, wouldn't it? Getting drunk would impair our judgment and our ability to play the game of life well. Paul says, don't get drunk, for this is debauchery. Now, has anybody here used the word debauchery this week in a sentence? No. We don't use that word very often today. And in fact, if you go back a few decades, that word peaks on the etymology of the word. You can see that it was used a little bit more back then. But even a few decades ago, that word meant someone who kind of lives in a sinful life, someone who's addicted to drugs or drinking or sexual living and promiscuity. We don't use that word very often. But the word that Paul is using here actually has a sense of wastefulness. Wastefulness. He says getting drunk is wasteful. It's the opposite of using that time well. It's not fruitful or beneficial. So Paul says, instead of wasting your time on being filled with something that impairs your judgment, he says, use your time to be filled with something that actually brings about great judgment and great wisdom. This is the Spirit, being filled with the Spirit. Now, we know what this looks like because Paul talks about it in Galatians 5. This is the fruit of the Spirit. Some of you have got a mug at home that talks about the fruit of the Spirit, or some cool Pinterest art on your wall that looks like the fruit of the Spirit. Paul says this is what people should look like that are filled with the Spirit. They are people that are marked by love. They're some of the most loving people in the world. They're people that are truly kind and considerate. They put other people before them. They're people that are very patient. More patient than other people in this world. You'll notice the way they're patient. And one of the marks of that fruit of the Spirit is people that are self-controlled. This is sober judgment. This is sound choices. This is walking in wisdom. Someone that is in control as they're being filled with the Spirit. And one other word I want to point out here that's helpful is the verb filled. We don't see that in English. We see filled and it looks like a past tense, one time kind of thing. But Paul's not using that type of verb. He's actually using a verb that's ongoing. It's a process. And here's why Paul's using that verb, is I believe that we are all vessels for the Spirit that have holes. And we tend to leak, don't we? We tend to leak the Spirit. You know, there are moments where we feel on fire and we've been reading or praying and we're like, Lord, I just feel so filled with your presence. I'm excited about this. And then a week later, it's gone. Paul knows this. He knows this about human nature. He knows that we have holes. So he says, continually be filled with the Spirit. For centuries, Christians have been walking in the Spirit and filling themselves with the Spirit through something called spiritual disciplines. If you've been a Christian for a long time, you know about these. And they've been tried and true for centuries. The spiritual disciplines are the means by which we continually fill ourselves. And the reason it's so important that we practice these daily is that we need them every single day. We leak. So we go to God in prayer daily. So we read His Word daily. So we create space in our calendar for silence and solitude. We make sure we have opportunities in our life where we serve others. We practice fasting and prayer. These are the spiritual disciplines that help ensure that we are filled with the Spirit continually. Okay, we've looked at what it looks like to walk in wisdom, and we've talked about how we should be fueled. And now I want to close with one last question of what's the goal? What's the point? Remember, we're talking about walking through life in wisdom, and because everyone arrives somewhere, but few people arrive on purpose, we want to land on the right finish line. What's the goal of walking wisely? Paul says in verse 19 and 20, he says this. He says, be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, and giving thanks always for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. You know, I was fascinated to study this board game made by Milton Bradley. Over the centuries, the game's changed quite a bit. And interestingly enough, the finish line of the game, the prize for winning the game, has actually changed as well. If you recall from the beginning, we looked at the last square on the checkerboard. In 1860, the original intent of the game was to teach children good moral behavior. And if you did that, you would end with what? A long life, 50, yikes, and a happy life. That's the prize. That was the goal. That was what you were living for. So you carefully walk through life and you hope that you make it to 50 and hopefully you're happy. That's your prize. That's what you win. Now, amazingly, that has changed through the decades. In fact, in 1960, the version of that commercial, do you know what the person that wins the game gets? Money. Money. Interesting. Milton Bradley didn't make that choice, but his company did. They made the change to 1960 that when you win the game, you're wealthy. By the year 2000, the picture of the person that wins is driving a convertible. They have a beautiful spouse and they live in a mansion. This is the finish line. That's as good as it gets as you play the game of life. Consider children playing the game of life. This is what it's all about. The game of life. If I get that mansion and the convertible and the beautiful spouse, then I'll be happy. What's the point? I mean, what is the point of walking wisely? Why should we be so careful about the steps we take through this checkered board? Paul points to one thing, and it's a little difficult to see because he uses a long run-on sentence. I mean, English teachers would hate Paul. He just goes on and on and on. He uses four participles in a row. And all these participles, a verb with an ing on the end, says addressing one another in spiritual songs, singing, making melody, and submitting to one another and giving thanks to God. Do you know what all these participles point to? It's the one thing. It's the finish line of life. If Paul created a board game called the game of life, the last checker of his board game would be worship. It's worship. It's worship. Look, he says addressing one another in psalms, hymns, spiritual songs. He's talking about singing, and he's not talking about just literally. He's using this as a metaphor for your life, that your life would be walking through life, making a melody to the Lord. And he says, look, in all things, through your heart, giving thanks, the definition of praise, always and for everything. That's pretty inclusive to who? God the Father in what? The name of the Lord Jesus, and submitting to one another out of reverence. Worship to Christ. This is what it means to walk in wisdom. Paul says walking wisely isn't making it to 50. Walking wisely isn't having a happy life. Walking wisely isn't even getting the mansion with the convertible. He says it's a life that is marked by worship of Jesus. In Colossians 3:16, Paul uses almost the exact same phrase. Listen to this. It sounds like he's repeating himself. In Colossians 3:16, it says, let the word of Christ dwell in you richly, teaching and admonishing one another in all wisdom. Here we go. Singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. Is this sounding familiar? With thankfulness in your hearts. But here's the line that he includes in Colossians and not in Ephesians. He clarifies in verse 17 of Colossians 3. He says, and whatever you do, in word or deed, do everything in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father and through him. This is Paul's great summary. He's pointing us to a life of worship. The Westminster Catechism summarizes the last checkered on the board game of life as this. The chief end of man is to glorify God and to enjoy him forever. This is the finish line. This is the point. This is the trajectory of the game of life. Paul says it this way, to do everything in the name of Jesus. You see, when we do this, every decision and action in our life is founded on the basis of who Jesus is and what he has done. This type of life has an overflow of the kind of living that makes much of Jesus. It's a life that makes much of Christ. And then at this point, our lives become a giant display of the unmatched worth and value of Jesus. Everything we do points people to him. This is walking in wisdom for Paul. We've looked at what walking in wisdom is and how to be fueled for it and what the goal is. How can we apply this then to our lives today? I want to get practical, very practical for just a moment. If you grabbed a bulletin on your way in, would you look in that bulletin? And there should be a little piece of cardstock. Looks like a calendar. Here it is. Go ahead and grab that. And I want you to turn to this side with the calendar. I'm calling this, that's in your hands, the calendar challenge. And I'm going to carefully explain this, but before I do, I want you to know this. I'm convinced, and I've truly been praying for this challenge and for you for weeks. And I'm convinced that in a room this size, that if everyone took this challenge and did it this week, I believe we would begin to see a group of people whose lives would be transformed into the image of Jesus. This is a step. It's a tool. I'm convinced of this. And so I want you to try. Try the challenge. And this is the challenge. You see this card. It has 7 days written on it and some time. This week, what I want you to do is write down everything you do. That's it. Just everything that you do for a week. And it doesn't need to be super detailed, just big strokes of time. How did you spend Monday morning? What time did you wake up? What did you do? How did you use your time? You see, because Paul says, look carefully then how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise. And so many of us are just walking through life. It's just happening week after week. And people say, hey, can we schedule this appointment? And you say, sure. And hey, could you do this? Sure. Yeah, okay, I'll do that. And suddenly this thing is not something we're looking very carefully at anymore. So what I want us to do this week is spend a week tracking what you do, how you use your time. Now, some of you that are a little more type A, you're going to get out like your fancy leather pocket box of colored pencils, and you're going to start color coding this thing, and it's going to have a system. You can go for that if you want. Some of you that are unorganized like me, it's going to be barely legible, and you're going to write in pen or pencil or whatever you can find. But I want you to track everything that you do for a week. And then here's the important part. 1 week, you track what you do. And I want you to sit down after that week. And on the back, I just put some space for prayerful observations. I want you this week to have a conversation with God about how you're spending your time. And do it prayerfully. I mean, spend a moment. Okay, Lord, this is kind of weird. This preacher dude told me to track everything that I'm doing. And I did it. So here I am, and I'm talking to you, and I'm praying, and I'm asking you, Lord, what do you notice about how I use my time? And there's two really concrete questions you can ask this week as you spend some time praying. Maybe next Sunday you sit down and look at this calendar. You can ask God this in prayer. First, Lord, is this the best use of my time for your glory? God, is this the best use of my time for your glory? I'm living to make much of Christ. Does my calendar reflect a life that makes much of Jesus? And the second question is this. Paul knows that you need the Spirit in order to live this kind of life. So I want you to ask God, Lord, am I creating space in my life every week to be filled with the Spirit? Take note on your calendar. What colors, what part and section of this week-long of time that we all have is being used to help fill ourselves with the Spirit, and what time is being used for God's glory? I want you to try it. Now, some of you right now, you're not convinced. You're on the ledge. You're thinking about tucking this away and not using it. So I'm going to give you, if you've been skiing, I'm going to give you the green circle version. Okay, it's kind of lame. It's the green circle version. But all of you black diamond folks, I want you to go for it all week, okay? Here's green circle if you need it. If this feels overwhelming, I want you to just pick one thing that you do regularly every week. And I'm convinced of this because I've been praying for you that right now God's Spirit might be speaking to you even now. You know what that is. You know that thing you do every week, how you use your time. And as God speaks to you about that thing, I just want you to track that one thing. So maybe for you, it's the thumb cramp that you get from scrolling through social media for hours, right? Maybe that's what you want to track this week. Find out how much time you're actually spending doing that. Maybe for you, you're like me and you have this weakness when you come home from a tired day and that horrible, evil red logo comes up on the TV screen called Netflix, right? And suddenly you've watched 3 seasons of a show. You don't know what happened. Track that, okay? Track that. Maybe for you, it's when you go to bed at night. Or maybe for you, you are not a morning person like me and you struggle to get up in the morning. Maybe you need to track this week how much time you're spending sleeping and resting. Maybe you need to track how much margin. I don't know what it is for you, but God's speaking to you right now. I believe that. Whatever it is, track that one thing if you need the green circle. And if you want to move up to the black diamond, track it all. And see how God might speak to you this week with how you're using your time. I'm convinced that this may transform this community. I want to close with a story, a powerful story, from a pastor and theologian. The year was 2000. It was in Memphis, Tennessee, and this particular pastor stepped up to a stage in front of thousands of students. It was the Passion One Day Conference, literally thousands, sprawling students on the grassy fields, and this awkward old theologian with huge glasses, he was not looking cool this day, steps up to the podium and he delivers this to a bunch of college students. He talks about a recent story of a couple in his church who recently died in a car accident. Missionaries, actually. Tragedy, right? They flew off the edge of a rail while on mission. Why would God allow that? They just died instantly. And this particular pastor says this. He asks the question, was this a tragedy? Should we mourn or celebrate? He says this to clarify, and I'll read a quote here to make sure I get the words right. He says, I'll tell you what a tragedy is. I want to read to you from Reader's Digest, February 2000, page 98. This is a real tragedy. And he's quoting Reader's Digest. Bob and Penny took early retirement from their jobs in Northeast 5 years ago when he was 59 and she was 51. Now they live in Punta Gorda, Florida, where they cruise on their 30-foot boat, they play softball, and collect seashells. He says, the American dream. Come to the end of your life, your one and only life, and let the last great work before you give an account to your Creator be, I collected seashells. You want to see my seashell collection? He says, that is a tragedy. That's a tragedy. We're all playing the game of life, but the reality is we get one turn, one chance. You don't get to reset the pieces and try again with the life that you are living right now, whatever age you are. It's happening. And the clock's ticking. Time keeps passing us by. And my appeal to you today, I'm pleading with you. Look carefully how you walk. Not as unwise, but as wise. Making the most of Jesus with your life. That is a life that counts. That won't be a tragedy when we celebrate your funeral. Paul actually uses similar words in 1 Corinthians. And the context is Paul is talking to a group of people, a church, who had trouble taking communion, actually, the bread and the wine. He says this in 1 Corinthians, that none of you should take communion without looking at your lives first, carefully, he says. Today, as the first Sunday of the month, we're about to celebrate communion together. And I want to encourage us with the same appeal that Paul makes to the church in Corinth. I want to make that appeal to us today. It's simply this. As the elements are being passed, I want you to examine your life. Take a moment, even now in the service, to begin to allow God's Spirit to speak to you, to prompt your heart and prod you in a direction with how you may be using your time. And spend a moment praying with him. I want this time to be yours. So take this time. Jeremy's going to play a song and just let the words wash over you as you take this time to pray and examine your life. And in a moment, I'll come back up and we'll take these elements together.
This is a presentation of Life Point Church. Our goal is to encourage and equip people to become fully developing followers of Christ. For more information, please visit sharethelife.org.